Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the spirits of the Southwest. The idea of speaking with spirits for many years seemed like something out of a science fiction novel. And to many today, it still feels that way. To those of us in the paranormal community who know what technology and means exist, it's becoming more of an accepted reality every single minute, especially when it comes to the spirits of the Southwest. If one had the goal of speaking with the dead, where would be a good location to start an attempted communication? You, of course, would want an area with a storied history, a history lined with every human emotion and action, love, hate, drive, violence, jealousy, rage, and so much more. There's no better place to find a history of all these emotions than the American Southwest. On today's episode of The Grave Talks, we discuss the conversations had with the dead. The paranormal investigative team of Dan Baldwin, Rhonda Hull, and Dwight Hull, authors of the book Speaking with the Spirits of the Old Southwest.
Two of my favorite locations in researching for the book purpose would be Matty Earp or Celia Blaylock's gravesite, as well as the theater in Tombstone. Matty was probably more emotional because we sort of built a friendship, if you will. When we initially made contact with her a year and a half, 2 years ago, she was really not in a very good place mentally. She was what we would say, you know, kind of stuck in that location. And we, let me make this clear. We don't usually investigate or go to cemeteries to talk to spirits because, you know, why would they still be hanging around there? But for Maddie's purpose, that was really the only place we knew that we could maybe contact her. We didn't know where she lived in town. And this is up near Superior, Arizona, past Dan's house. So when we initially made contact, she was very still angry, very sad. She was willing and able to cooperate and talk to us, very forthright, but she just was still very in a bad place. So we got some information out of her, but she didn't want any help. We really felt very, very sad, I guess you could say, when we left there, like helpless. We didn't like to see her where she was at. But we let her be. You know, you can't, you can only offer the help. Same with the living. You can't force people to go to a better place. And then sometime later in researching for book two, we went back there. And I don't know what happened, but she was now in a much, much better place, you know, spiritually. She had gone into the light, if you will, had met up with family. She was able to communicate with us that she was, in fact, gifted when she lived. She used a pendulum, I believe. That was her tool of the trade. So she was very, very forthcoming. So all three of us built a rapport with her. And in fact, we invited her, you know, to come back to Tombstone sometime and make new memories just by visiting us. And she's done that. So very, very emotional, but good ending, if you will.
Tell me about that. Were you asked a spirit to come back to another place in a different time, obviously, from when they lived? What happened there?
Well, since Maddie had such a bad experience when she lived in Tombstone with Wyatt and the Earps and during the days of the Cowboys, and a lot of people that go up to her gravesite, you know, continually ask her about her relationship with Wyatt. And, you know, that didn't really bode well with her. We wanted to lend help to give her some new memories, maybe some good memories in making friends. So we invited her to come visit us, and we don't do this with any old spirit. But because we felt such a connection to her, especially me, we invited her to, you know, come visit us, if you will, hang out, come down to Tombstone, you know, see what it's like today. It's not the same. You know, we want you to have build some happy memories. But she came back and visited us several times. Her and I have kind of a code when she visits, and that's to turn on my cell phone camera twice in a row so that I know it can't be a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And I think it's happened three times since we visited her. So it's kind of an interesting little relationship.
That's interesting with a spirit that's actually able to interact with, I guess, current technology, for lack of a better term. Quite often we hear it where they don't know what to make of some of these things, but then to be able to somehow interact or trigger certain things, and maybe she doesn't really know what it is other than it's making a communication to you that seems to make sense that it's her. Tell me more about some other locations that you've been to and some of the connections that you've made with the other side.
Well, one of the other locations that really was extremely emotional for me, as well as Dan and Dwight, was a location called the Wyatt Earp Theater. I think it's changed the name now, but a couple of years ago, we held an event in Tombstone. We do this every year to benefit Wounded Warriors. And that year, Brian Cano from Haunted Collector was our talent, if you will. So we had a group of about 40 people that we took to this theater. Now it's a theater where they do reenactments. And but back in the day, it was Hoptown, or where the Chinese people lived. And it was, from best we can tell, record-wise, it was some kind of a mercantile store. So when we walked in there, a few of us in the group, as well as I did, knew that there were spirits present. But Dan, Dwight, and I were really ready to kind of give it to Brian. We were letting them do their thing, and we were really tired. So we all kind of sat back. Dan and myself were in the back of the room, and Dwight was kind of watching the door. And during some point, they were doing an EVP session, and Brian got an EVP that was pretty clear. So they wanted validation. So they called one by one. He called Dwight up first to kind of see if he could help. And then it turned out that he needed Dan up there to do the pendulum. And Dan didn't bring his pendulum because we weren't planning on really partaking in the this investigation. So we borrowed a necklace from a girl that happened to be standing there, and they started conducting a pendulum session. Eventually, I got called into the mix to help this, whoever it was. From the moment I stood up from my seat, I immediately started, I was just overwhelmed with emotion, started just bawling. By the time I got to the bar where everybody was focused around, I couldn't even talk out loud. What ended up happening was there was two spirits present, a murder victim and the murderer. And the victim had come back to help the murderer cross over. Funny twist, though, they were brothers. The EVP that Brian got was something to the effect of, yeah, I killed somebody. So that was from the murderer. We ended up helping the brother cross his brother over in a matter of probably a minute or 30 seconds. It wasn't very long. It seemed like it was forever. But the moment that spirit crossed over, Dan's pendulum kind of flipped around his hand a couple of times and then, you know, just like straight. And there was an energy shift. Everybody in the room at the same time just instantly started crying, weeping. And nobody really understood why. But it was very, very emotional, probably the most emotional crossover I've ever experienced.
When there is that sort of a shift, and maybe take me back to maybe the first time you experienced that, I mean, what goes through your mind when it's such a dramatic change and you're not really quite sure how or why that's happening emotionally to you?
You know, I have crossed probably hundreds of people over, spirits, including my own mother. I've never, ever, ever felt that energy shift until this. I mean, I've cried, you know, weeped a little bit, but I've never felt this much of an energy shift. It was tactile. You could feel it. Even Brian Kenna, who's very much a skeptic, he had an all of a sudden allergy attack, he said. But he likened it, he likened it to the shift as if you were doing an exorcism. Now, I've never seen or been a part of an exorcism, but I mean, it was, I can't even explain it. You had to be there to witness it. Definitely an emotional from you're fine one minute to you're just bawling uncontrollably the next.
When you're helping someone cross over, what exactly is going on there? Because, I mean, it's somewhat of an opinion-based question, but we hear about it quite often. And we hear about kind of this, my understanding of there's this plane of, a plane that we're on, but they're there too when we can't always see them or hear them. But they're there. And then there's the idea of helping them move from that area, from our plane, into another plane. What is the process of crossing over exactly?
Well, from my experience, it is simply crossing them into the light, if you will, into the good place where all of their friends and family are waiting. Although oftentimes a friend or family member will come kind of guide them. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of ESP-wise assisting them, you know, going in to meet their mother, father, brother, whoever it is, mm-hmm. that's taking them into this big, bright, white light, which, you know, I mean, I guess it depends on your faith. And I don't practice any faith, but I believe that there, you know, there's a heaven and a hell, if you will. But just it's your own emotional experience. So when I cross somebody over, it's going with their family and friends into this wonderful place of nothing but pure love.
Why, in your opinion, is it that sometimes they need the living to help them take that step? I guess I'm just trying to understand that. These are questions I've always had after hearing thousands upon thousands of stories. And we hear these actions being taken quite often, but it's rare that we really jump into the, you know, the story, the actions, the thought process and everything behind it. So that's where a lot of my questions are kind of coming from. And that's one of them is why does it take the living to help guide them there? And why couldn't they just do it on their own?
Well, you know, you're right. They should be able to do it on their own, but some spirits, and, you know, not all of them, but some spirits are stuck, if you will. They're afraid. There's fear. Maybe they grew up in a severely religious household, and they are self-judging, mm-hmm. or they're afraid of judgment, or maybe they, you know, did something. It's usually fear. From my encounters, that is keeping them from going into this great place. They're living basically in their own version of hell.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks. And then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.